This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It's your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site for the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation. Two great networks. Seth's got inside sources. I've got media access. We both have been fans for as long as we can remember. I can remember the days of Tim Rosenbaugh and Tom Toupin back then. And Seth's not quite as old as I am, so he might not remember all the way back then. But here we are in episode 197. And we're going to talk preseason because we actually wrapped up a preseason game. We've got another preseason game to look at. So what are you excited about now that we've got one game under our belts and we actually have some real fake football, but real football nonetheless, because they're not playing each other now. They're not playing themselves.
It was one of those things where you saw glimpses. You saw glimpses of physicality on the offensive line. You saw glimpses of, holy cow, David Johnson looks healthy and explosive. You saw glimpses of Josh Rosen. You saw glimpses, but then there was a lot of filler in between. There was a lot of, okay, well, this is clearly preseason football. Like you said, it's still football, but it was definitely preseason football, and you're like, man, this is bad. I mean, and you know, like we said, both of us wrote about it. One of my writers, Kyle Posey, wrote about it. We talked about it on game day. You know, the Chargers didn't have Joey Bosa, and that's maybe one of the top, you know, 3 to 5 defensive linemen in the NFL. So it still was fun to watch. It was a great glimpse, but at the same time, you're like, all right, let's not like go overboard, because we're talking about maybe one of the most disruptive players in the NFL not even being out there. So, you know, it was the tease to whet the appetite, but now it's like, all right, come on September, let's get here, let's get started for real now.
And that was actually one of the things I wrote about before the game, is obviously preseason you tend to rest guys and you don't play full out, but we were robbed in the preseason. There could have been, at least for a few plays, there were some fantastic matchups you could have seen. You could have seen DJ Humphries on Joey Bosa, which is something, honestly, we want to see. They will play each other later in the year, but we want to see, oh, DJ can do this. We were robbed of Patrick Peterson and Keenan Allen. We were robbed of Casey Hayward guarding Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, we didn't get everything we could have. And understandably, it's the preseason, and the Cardinals have their own reasons to play their top guys early on, since it's a new coaching staff and it's a new system. And San Diego obviously has their reasons for not. But what we're going to talk about this game, this in this show, which will obviously be the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web that you're going to find this week, is we're going to talk about our biggest takeaways from that game, whether positive or negative. We're going to kind of go through those position battles that we have on the Cardinals roster, and look ahead to the game on Friday against the New Orleans Saints. And what do we want to see this time around? So let's go ahead and start with 5 biggest takeaways either way. What was one of your biggest takeaways from the game, either way, positive or negative? We'll both kind of go through those lists.
I'll start on the defensive side of the ball. I thought two backups were phenomenal. I thought A.J. Howard and Bene Benwakir were both just so, so good. And they played like they knew they had to play really well in order to make this team. And it was great to see that. You know, I wrote about it in my kind of what we learned from the game. And what we learned from the game is that the Cardinals have a really good starting secondary. And it looks like, obviously, it's preseason game one, but it looks like they have some talent on the second team as well. And so that was a really good sign. It was fun to watch. A.J. Howard delivered a fantastic blow, jarring a fumble loose on a receiver that was inexplicably calls for the new leading with the helmet rule. Bad call, but it was, you know, it is what it is. And then, you know,
just please don't make that call in this season. Yeah. Let it be a preseason workaround, please.
And Ben Wakir was just, I mean, he was just so good. He was probably, I mean, I would say outside of Cappy, he was probably the best defensive player in that game. Because he, I mean, we're talking about a tip pass that led to A.J. Howard's interception. We're talking a forced fumble that led, excuse me, to the Jeremy Cash touchdown return. And, you know, those, he was just all over the field making plays. And he's, what, 32, 33? I mean, he just looked great.
Well, and for me, mine was related to Ben Wickery, but it wasn't directly related to him. One of my biggest takeaways was, wait a minute, Brandon Williams is where on the depth chart? Because it, kind of the media, we've all been asking about how Williams is doing competing with Jamar Taylor for the starting job. And based on what I saw at training camp, it led me to believe that he might be just behind Taylor on the depth chart, because I'd see him shadowing Taylor on, you know, team drills when it's, you know, defense against air. And then I'd see him every once in a while on the field on first beat, but it seemed like it was too few reps. I didn't know exactly where it was. And Steve Wilks has certainly done his job at not really showing his hand at all. But what was shocking was to find out exactly where Brandon Williams sits. And that's deep down the depth chart. He's not the number two guy behind. Now, the depth chart says he's behind Ben Wickery. He's behind Jamar Taylor and Ben Wickery. But we actually see in real time that he's not really competing for the starting job. He was number five corner on the depth chart, because you had Patrick Peterson, Jamar Taylor on the first team. Now, Buda Baker plays corner, so they play slot, so they only use two. Now, on the second team, when it was base, they had Ben Wickery and rookie Chris Campbell, their sixth-round pick. And then on nickel packages, that's when Brandon Williams came in with Ben Wickery sliding over to the slot. And then Williams played, like, the entire second half as well with the third team. And so my biggest takeaway was, wait a minute. Brandon Williams isn't competing for a starting job. He's working his tail off to just make the roster right now. And that led me on my roster prediction to bump him from the final roster. I think as of right now, I would change my mind on that based on what I saw from special teams, because he was on every special teams unit. But having that low on the depth chart, that was a surprise and a concern, because now he has a coach who is a DB guy. And it's clear that if he's that far on the depth chart, he's not making progress.
Well, and it wasn't just that, right? It was
and then he was bad.
Awful. Yeah. Like, I mean, so he was really far down the depth chart. Like you said, that's concerning. But then he was just, I mean, he was so bad. He gave or he whiffed on a tackle, which is supposed to be kind of where he's at, right? Like, that's he's a physical, you know, corner, so that was supposed to be the plus, and he misses on an open field tackle. And then on the Chargers final drive, going up against nobodies, and I'm not trying to be rude, but going up against nobodies, he had two pass interference calls that lengthened their drive, and
had a special teams penalty as well.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff is just, I mean, that's elementary. That's not even like rookie stuff. That is, like you said, it's hard to see a way that he makes the roster if anybody else steps up on special teams, because there's no saving grace for him at this point, so to speak. Like, if it's close between, let's say, like a Zeke Turner and a Dietrich Nichols and a Brandon Williams. Special teams is important, but they also want a guy out there that they don't want to have to go get another cornerback in in a month if, God forbid, something happened to somebody. Like after game one, if somebody goes down in game one and is going to miss a couple weeks, they want to be able to put in a corner that they trust. And I can tell you for a fact right now, that's not Brandon Williams. So,
oh my goodness. But yeah, it was shockingly bad.
And you know, I'll stay on the negative, but it's not a negative as in play, but it's just a negative because you hate to see this, and that's the injury to Jeremy Cash. I mean, we talked about the lack of depth on this linebacking corps, and it's pretty bad. I mean, I think you and I would agree with that. But there had been, you know, one kind of bright spot throughout camp, and a guy that has really endeared himself to the team, and that was Jeremy Cash. He looked as close to a lock as you can have at this juncture with kind of what they have right now on the second team linebacking corps. And that injury was just – that's one of the most freak ACL tears I've ever seen, because that wasn't even a – like he got – juked. That was just a simple he went to go make a form tackle and his cleat stuck in the ground and it just tore. And that is a brutal loss in terms of depth on an already thin unit, and now you're talking about a guy like Gerald Hodges, who's a journeyman backup He started, I think, 23 or 25 games in his career out of the 60-some-odd games he's played. I mean, he is a legitimate NFL backup linebacker only. And Cash is still young and kind of growing into the position of linebacker where we know what Hodges is. And there was a reason they had not brought Hodges in, because they liked what Cash offered more. So it's unfortunate that the injury transpired.
For me, my next big takeaway is actually a positive, and that is looking at the very short amount of time when David Johnson was out on the field. My goodness, that the offensive line was so good on those two running plays. David Johnson looked – it was a statement, the I'm back statement. Mike Iupati mauled. Mason Cole looked coming on those running plays. Mason Cole did really well as well. So you're like, oh, look at that. He's another guy who can maul in the running game. And so now I noticed that after David Johnson left, it was TJ and it was Chase Edmonds out there, that the running game kind of disappeared. And so – when you see that, even though they're really excited about Chase Edmonds, you look at what David Johnson did in such a short amount of time, you're going, oh goodness, if he stays healthy, this is going to be a fun year to watch him.
And it sounds kind of stupid to say out loud, but that's the difference between David Johnson and anybody, right? Like, I mean, unless you have a David Johnson and a Le'Veon Bell, or a David Johnson and a Todd Gurley on your roster, that's the whole drop off thing. And you know, again, if that all comes to fruition, there'll be a huge difference in terms of, you know, what salary he'll be demanding and the reason he'll be demanding it. But yeah, you're right. And you know, I'm gonna piggyback onto that. I thought just the physicality of that offensive line was so wonderful to see. Even on those stuffed runs of Chase Edmonds, there were plays where Edmonds has to learn, you know, to get skinny or to take on a guy one-on-one. And, you know, for a guy from Fordham, that's tough. But you watch the physicality of Mikey Potty and the work that Mason Cole and even Justin Pugh, who has, you know, at times not looked great at camp. And now all of a sudden these guys are out mauling a front line of the LA Chargers. Again, yeah, okay, it was out Joey Bosa. So yes, we do have to take that with a grain of salt. But it was just wonderful to see, because that's what we've been waiting for, right? Like, that's what we've been wanting to see. And now you saw it.
My next big takeaway is a negative. It's just how little help Josh Rosen got. We're going to look at the performance of Josh Rosen and say that at least numbers-wise, it was very pedestrian. But he gave you positives when no one around him was helping him. Obviously, if you watched the game, you saw that Daniel Munier, what was 5 or 6 different shotgun snaps, basically rolled the ball to him. So he wasn't able to keep his eyes down the field. The offensive line could not protect him. And in part, this is fair. There's going to be some fairness to this, is that it was the second team line against the first team defense for the Chargers for a little bit. But even then, he did have one bad throw. I mean, there should have been an interception return for touchdown that was dropped. But on other throws, so he had a throw down on the right sideline that Greg Little couldn't come up with. He had a throw to J.J. Nelson that was simply dropped. He had a throw down the seam to Christian Kirk. It was a beautiful throw that Kirk just apparently couldn't locate because I think it bounced off his shoulder pads. I mean, if he turns the other way, it's a beautiful throw and catch. And then Greg Little, again, who's been having a fantastic camp, made a really nice catch on a brilliant throw down the field. Beautiful, beautiful throw, but couldn't get his feet down. Couldn't get both feet down. So it was, you saw positives from Rosen, but you were just looking at, oh my heavens, he got no help at all. The offensive line was atrocious in front of him. His receivers didn't help him at all. But he still did some nice things. You could see the arm talent. In fact, that's the one thing that stood out. You're like, oh wow, he can throw the ball really well.
Yeah, and you know, it's the whole idea of that's the unfortunate thing about playing with. And this will be kind of my fourth take. That's the unfortunate reality of playing with, in reality, wide receiver 5 and 6s when they're supposed to be wide receiver 2, 3, and 4, right? Like, that's what happens when you have fringe guys in key positions. And we saw that play out with Greg Little not able to win a contested catch and then not able to get a foot down on a really nice back shoulder throw. We saw that with, again, J.J. Nelson and just a clean drop. These are guys that if you're talking about them as your, like, 5th option, maybe 6th option, you're in a good spot. But we're talking about, like, these are guys that are competing for that kind of wide receiver 2 position. Speaking of which, we didn't see anything out of Bryce Butler or Chad Williams. I'm not sure that was their fault in this juncture, but it's definitely, you know, as we get to later, that'll be something to continue to keep an eye on.
For me, one of my other takeaways is actually something I noticed at the very beginning, and it's something that I don't always pay attention to, but I thought about, wait, I want to pay attention to who's on the starting special teams just to see – just to get a clue as to, you know, when those last few roster spots, you look at who among the back end of the roster is already a starter on special teams. And so there were some names that stood out in particular. Well, one, Brandon Williams was on everything. The one thing I did not catch the kickoff, like the kick return team, because I at that point I didn't know if the starters were in it, so I didn't try to go look at that. So looking at kickoff, so you've got guys like undrafted cornerback Dietrich Nichols, you had undrafted safety Zeke Turner, who was a special teams ace at Washington. You had Brandon Williams, you had Rudy Ford. Then you have on the punt teams, you also saw Arthur Motes and Jaquise Smith, guys who are battling for spots on the roster. You also saw undrafted linebacker Dennis Gardeck, who was on there. Trent Sherfield, a guy that appears by some might be a lock for the roster. He's kind of like this year's Jerron Brown 5 years later. He was a starting punt gunner, which bodes well for him, like Jerron Brown was. And so I kind of took away looking at those final pieces to the roster. While we're looking at positions and how they do on defense, I paid attention to who were the starters on special teams and go, I think we have a little bit of insight who might have a greater shot at the roster. You look at guys like Zeke Turner or Dietrich Nichols or Trent Sherfield, that those are the guys to keep an eye on towards the back end of the position rooms because of that they're going to be able to contribute day one on special teams.
And then my final takeaway for this was this defense has a chance to be better than the defense that James Betcher ran over the last three seasons. And that's a huge statement when you consider, if you're a fan of something like DVOA, they've been top, I believe, seven every year in DVOA. So, defensive DVOA. So you're talking about, you know, something, you're talking about being better than that. And what I see is, and something that Chandler Jones talked about during the game on Saturday was that they are playing more aggressively and more physical because they're not having to think as much. They have one assignment and they go to that assignment on everything. And that is that's a different way of doing things. And it's new. And I thought you saw a preview of that with the aggressiveness of Robert Kambiche, the play of Olsen Pierre, but more importantly than maybe any of those guys, and those guys are important, so you know I'm not saying they're not, but maybe the most important was you saw Hassan Reddick playing that sideline to sideline type of play, and that aggressiveness and that ability to use his athleticism in a way that kind of begets what he was envisioned to be as a rookie.
And my final takeaway is overall about the first team in general. I loved what I saw. That for me, what one of the most important things in a first preseason game is, one, it's not, I don't care about the results. I'll be honest. I don't care about the results of preseason games because when games are decided, it's when third and fourth string players are out in the field. And the majority of these players will not be on rosters come the beginning of September. Now, what I do like to look at it is how do the starters look in short periods of time? And what we saw was the offense was effective, moved the ball down the field and got a touchdown. They protected. I mean, Sam Bradford only threw the ball once, but David Johnson looked great. They got one throw to Ricky Seals-Jones, and then they got a great effort from Chase Edmonds. But on defense, that first possession also, that three and out. And what are they looking for? So they want penetration and they want aggressiveness up front and they want to get their hands on balls in the defensive backfield. And what we got out of two out of three plays was the defense getting their hands on balls. Jamar Taylor got his hand on a ball and Trey Boston got his hand on a ball. And if you get your hands on balls, I mean, well, jokes aside, in a football game, you're able to get your hands on the ball, good things are going to happen. You're going to break up passes and you're going to stop teams on third down, or you're going to turn the ball over. You're going to take it away. And so I was very, very impressed with my first impressions of both the first team offense and the first team defense. And aside from all the individual players that stood out, I think Cap Cappy is in the heart of every Cardinals fan right now because he loves to rush the passer. No one's paying attention to the fact he doesn't really give much effort against the run, which I think has been his issue the last eight cuts that he's had. But boy, is he fun to watch rushing the passer.
He is, and in a race of, you know, filling in for Marcus Golden that is not going exactly swimmingly, he has emerged as a viable rotational piece. He's not the starter. Like you said, he doesn't do enough two-way to be a starter, but to be frank at this point, none of them have. So I think if you're talking two-way, what is it, Vontarius Dora has probably been the best of the group. But you haven't seen the pass rush from Dora or Moats that Cappy's offered, and you'd be hard-pressed to sell me that Benson Mowaya, who's a good player,
is giving that much more effort against the run than Javius. So
true.
It's just one of those interesting aspects of everything. I think when it's all said and done in this game, and I think the biggest takeaway for both of us, you know, just between us texting, talking, and writing, I think the biggest takeaway for both of us is simply that this team, again, it was about maybe 15 total plays, but this team looks good with the first team, and then there is some major drop off and concern with the second team. And that was immediately apparent when you saw the Josh Rosen time, when you started to see the inability of the linebackers to make plays after the disruption of the quarterback or the running back. And even Christian Campbell at times was struggling to contain Jeremy Davis and Geno Smith. And that was, you know, I think that's common. Like, don't get me wrong. It's a common thing. But the chasm between the two is way more than we expected.
Yes, and with the exception, I think there's not a – I mean, at running back, I think they're okay depth-wise. At receiver, they're tight end, they're offensive line, there's no hope there. But on the defensive side, I think there's two areas where you're okay depth-wise, and that's on the defensive in the defensive interior, and then maybe at cornerback if you get Ben Wickery, who could be a legitimate option, and if you like what you saw from a not Travell Dixon, but A.J. Howard, the undrafted rookie out of Appalachian State, that's going to be a positive. That's going to be positive moving forward. But with that part, we're going to move on to the next part of the show here on Rise Up Sea Red, the best hour Cardinals talk on the web. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the position battles. We've touched on it a little bit. We're going to see what we saw and what the depth chart looks like, where we think those battles are headed. That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And before we get back, I want to talk to you, of course, as we do every single week, about our friends over at harrys.com. Where I made the switch several months ago, going from my electric blade to the Harry's blade. I'd been doing the electric blade for years. I didn't like how the portable blades, the disposable blades felt. It was kind of a waste of time for me. And I didn't like the price of the more expensive ones. But what I found with Harry's, it gives you a great shave. It's a fantastic price. I get a great close shave. I'll be shaving in the morning. I don't shave every day, but I'm shaving tomorrow morning. I'll have the Harry's stuff out and I'll use it. It's high quality blades. They know that switching razors, it's not an easy decision. So there's a trial offer. It's a company that bought a factory that's making some of the highest quality blades for over 95 years. And so without giving you the bells and whistles, they give you great blades at a great price. Their blades are just $2 a blade, a little bit less than that compared to $4 or more. So if you don't love your shape, if you let Harry's know within 30 days, they'll give you a full refund. So what we've got for the Rise Up Sea Red listeners, a $13 value trial set. Try it out. It doesn't cost you a thing. You get a close, comfortable shave. You get the handle. You get the 5-blade razor. Comes with the lubricating strip, the trimmer blade. The shave gel is wonderful. It smells great, feels great. And you get the travel blade cover. So take advantage of this opportunity. Listeners of the show can redeem their trial set. It's at harrys.com/CRED. Again, harrys.com/CRED. Take advantage of this opportunity. Go to harrys.com/CRED and redeem your offer and let them know that Seth and I sent you to help support the show. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And now we're ready to move on to talk about, well, we've got the roster. We got a game under our belts. We talked about the takeaways from the game, but let's look at the position battles that we're doing. Do we know anything more than we knew before? Let's start with wide receiver, where the depth chart still shows Larry Fitzgerald and Bryce Butler as the top two. You've got Chad Williams and J.J. Nelson and Christian Kirk and Greg Little and Trent Sherfield. And then you've got a bunch of the other guys, Carlton Agadosi, You got Jalen Tolliver, Corey Willis, whole bunch of guys down the line. Rashad Ross was there, not anymore. They've signed an undrafted rookie guy since then, who will get the look now this week, perhaps. Did we learn anything about the wide receiver position? Because other than the fact that, no one stepped up in my mind.
I don't know if you can blame the wide receivers in this one. There wasn't a lot for them to work with. One, they only attempted two passes with Sam Bradford. One was nullified on a penalty, so you got that going for you. That was Larry Fitzgerald's one and only target and catch of the game, and it didn't happen on paper. And then you had the completion to Ricky Seals-Jones, which was a 100% Sam Bradford pass, where you're talking about a 6-yard dump off short of the end zone. That is a super high completion pass. And so, yeah. But, Josh Rosen, you talked about it. There was not a lot of time for Rosen to do much of anything. Daniel Munier really struggled, is putting it lightly, wouldn't you say? I mean, he was awful. And it affected the game overall. You had a situation where you also had, you had drops. You had Greg Little being Greg Little. Yeah, the Cardinals backed up in their own end zone at one point. It was what it was at that point, right? Hey. So while nothing happened at all, I don't think you can lay blame anywhere for it.
True. Now, for me, the one thing that I took away from the receiver room is, they've been talking about how great Greg Little been in camp. But when we got the bright lights again, Greg Little was what he's always been, inconsistent. You can't expect everyone to – maybe he didn't have a chance to get a second foot down. But what we saw from receivers last year is, if you've got a bunch of, number four, number five receivers on your team, you can't expect big plays. But looking at Greg Little and comments that he himself made – lead me to believe that he is far from a lock on this roster, because he doesn't play special teams. He said himself that his greatest value to a team is at receiver. And so if he doesn't manage to get up to the number two or number three receiver, I don't see how he's on this team, because after number three, maybe number four, if you keep six receivers, you can have two guys that do special teams. But if you only keep five, number four and five have to be significant on special teams. And Greg Little is not going to climb that depth chart by not hauling in tough passes in actual games. He's shown to be a good possession guy in the middle of the field in practice, but we didn't see that in a game, and that's not going to help him.
Exactly. So when you look at it overall, I thought – Little's performance was the only one I would justify as disappointing or even put in that, realm. But the rest of – there was nothing. I mean, like I said, Bryce Butler didn't even come up to bat or come up to get a try. Chad Williams, same type of thing. So when you look at it all in all, nothing was clarified. But I don't think anything was changed either. Like there's nothing bad that happened, basically, other than, you kind of hit it. Like, it's unfortunately likely that Greg Little is just a guy that can't get his talent to produce on the field.
Now, at running back, what we saw, but actually there was something. The running back depth chart has really been clear. You've got David Johnson, you've got Chase Edmonds, you've got DJ Foster, who's been very clear the number three running back, and you got TJ Logan and Sherman Beatty there at the back end. But for me, what I thought was really interesting is how they treated Chase Edmonds. Maybe it was because he played the target number of snaps that they wanted him to play, but Chase Edmonds, like David Johns, was out after two plays. Chase Edmonds was out of the game when the starters came out, which tells you something. They see Edmonds as critical a piece to this offense this year as they do anyone else on that first team. That was the biggest surprise for me, is that, I thought they would give Edmonds a few more carries. And instead, when Rosen came out on the field with the twos, it was DJ Foster back there.
Yep. And I think you're right. This, I tweeted it out after he scored the touchdown, but also said, you know, if you're a fantasy player, and this isn't a fantasy podcast by any means, but if you're a fantasy player, that's a late round, like, you know, stash type of pick, Chase Edmonds in the, you know, 14th round, 15th round, where you grab him if you have David Johnson, because he's probably not going to do a whole lot in terms of production, but he is the guy, it looks like, that's going to get the first crack at replacing David Johnson if, heaven forbid, anything happens this year.
Now, behind the, if we look at backup center, what in the world is going on at backup center that Mason Cole, I'm fine with him starting, but I thought there was going to be a battle for backup center, and Daniel Munyer took almost every single snap, wasn't good, and then we didn't see Evan Bame, which, come on, the Cardinals drafted Evan Bame as a center to be a center, and we still haven't seen him at center.
And that is the unfortunate reality of the situation right now. And you and I talked about this last week. You know, one of the guys that I'm able to speak to about some of the things going on inside the Cardinals had basically said to this effect that the Cardinals backup center is not on the roster. And you and I touched on that last week for that reason, you know, and then Munyer comes out and basically makes us look like really smart people. And Jess is, so take nothing away from Jess, but we also got that information kind of gifted to us as well. So, you know, and so now, you know, contact told us today, because we've been, you asked it in the press conference after the game. You and I have talked and written about it. What's going on with Evan Bay? Why is he not even getting snaps at the backup center position? Well, it's Tuesday, August 14th,
mm-hmm.
and it happened today at practice.
Happened today.
So breaking news that you won't get until Thursday, but it happened for the first time on Tuesday, August 14th. The Cardinals had seen enough of Munyer, and they gave Evan Bame some work at center. I think you and I are going to continue to move forward with the idea that the backup center is not on this roster until I would guess at this time Evan Bame proves us otherwise, because I just don't see how, if Munyer was so bad on Saturday, they had Sunday off and then they back to work on Monday, and it was two practices and they're going, all right, give Evan Bame a shot.
Fine. We'll let Evan snap. Fine. Right.
So that tells you it didn't get better since Saturday.
Oh, jeez.
And so, you know, I'm sure he'll be the first guy after Cole, still Daniel Munyer. But I think we'll see Evan Bame get some work at center on Friday, which will be – I mean, that could be it's awful to talk about and it's awful to say, but that could be the key to Evan Bame making this – roster, that AQ Shipley was injured, Daniel Munyer is not a good center, and now we're to the point where Evan Bame is going to finally get some work at center under the new regime.
And we need to see that because let's be honest. Evan Bame, now he didn't have the physical profile that Mason Cole does, but Evan Bame was essentially Mason Cole coming out of college because he was a four-year starter. The difference was he was playing his natural position the entire time, and Mason Cole was clearly the best lineman on Michigan's team because he was a natural interior player playing left tackle for 3 years. But beyond that, yes, I want to see Evan succeed. He's a good enough kid. He's kind of paid his dues, had to play guard, and which he's not particularly good at. And, you know, I'm excited. I want to see him succeed. Now, at cornerback, like we talked about earlier, for me, it was a huge revelation in the fact that, guess what? Brandon Williams is nowhere near battling for that starting job. In fact, guess what? Jamar Taylor is and will be the starter this year. There's no question in my mind. There's no one pushing him. He's obviously they're still competing, but it's not even close. Jamar Taylor is the starter. What is interesting is what's going to happen behind Patrick Peterson and Jamar Taylor.
Yeah, and it looks like it's going to be been worky. It looks like obviously Buda Baker is going to get some work in the slot, which brings then Trey Boston onto the field. But if they're going to add another defensive back, it looks like it's going to been worky. And then that's where, like you said, it gets interesting. Christian Campbell, I mean, I feel like he's as close to a lock as a six-round pick can be on making the roster, because he's listed as, you know, technically cornerback four, but in the Cardinals system, it's more like cornerback five because of the fact that they bring in, you know,
Buda plays in the slot.
Yeah, Buda plays in the slot, and then Boston plays safety. But I just think you're at the point where that you know who your top three are, and then you know who your top three safeties are. And then the question becomes, how many do you keep? And so do you keep five, you know, kind of strictly cornerbacks, and then you have your four safeties with Buda as your flex, so that's 10 defensive backs. I mean, that's a big chunk of the roster. Or, you know, are you keeping five defensive backs and then five safeties with Buda as that flex guy? So 10 again, but, you know, one of them is kind of plays both positions. So that's the interesting thing, because we, like you said, we know who the starters are. In base, if you will, the starters are Patrick Peterson, Jamar Taylor, Buda Baker, and Antoine Bethea. When they go to nickel, it's Peterson, Taylor, Baker, and then Trey Boston and Bethea. And that's gonna be your quote unquote base defense in terms of amount of snaps, I'm gonna guess.
Yeah, and then you'll get Ben Wickery in there for, you know, every once in a while if they go dime. Every right. once in a while they might go dime, so he might get three or four snaps a game, maybe. And so, yeah, so after that, I think you're right. Chris Campbell has definitely done enough that he's going to make the roster, because that's they believe, and Steve Wilks really likes him. He likes the potential that he offers. He likes his physical profile, and he likes his style of play.
And Rudy Ford's going to make this roster too. Because
yeah, so he's safety four. It's, do you keep 10 defensive backs? And if you're going to keep 10 defensive backs as a corner safety, or if you only go nine, who's that last guy? Is it Brandon Williams? Is it Dietrich Nichols? Brandon Williams plays everything on special teams. Dietrich Nichols played on special teams. AJ Howard didn't play special teams, but offers perhaps some a high upside on as a defender. And you got Zeke Turner, who plays all over on special teams too.
Right, exactly. And so you're in a position now where, because of the questions at linebacker, I don't know if they go one, like they go heavy one way then, or go the opposite way and just say, well, we know we're screwed if injuries happen anyways. Let's just keep the best football players. And because right now I think that would be, you're keeping obviously your three starters and at linebacker in Buchanan, Reddick, and Bynes, but then who's the next guy? Do you keep six, or do you only end up keeping five? And then that gives you the ability to keep, like you said, 10 defensive backs. Now, there's still going to be questions on who those are, but, you know, A.J. Howard played out of his mind on Saturday. Dietrich Nichols was very physical on Saturday, did a lot of good work. Zeke Turner is getting a lot of run on special teams, like you said. So it's hard to figure out what they're going to do at the defensive back position, because there's, you don't want to say too much talent because that's an overstatement, but there's a lot of talent. But you also don't know what they're going to do at the linebacker position, because it's completely opposite, where there's not enough talent. And so do you have to keep extra guys just in case, or do you say, well, we can find a player of this ilk at any time, we'll just bring him back if anything happens. So it's one of those situations. I think they're going to end up keeping 10 defensive backs because of the talent of that in that secondary, and you're going to want to keep as much talent as possible. And again, we've talked about this. I think in the grand scheme of things, Josh Bynes is only going to be playing 50% of the snaps. And if anything were to happen to Reddick or Buchanan, they're just going to put Bynes in and still run two linebackers more so than they would, bringing in somebody to replace Buchanan or Reddick in that sense.
And then at defensive end, we've kind of talked about a little bit. So you've got Chandler Jones on one end, and it's a battle of who's going to start the season on the other side, replacing Marcus Golden, who apparently is not coming back quickly. And we're okay with that. You've got to take care of the ACL. You can't just come back. That's one of those injuries that you can't rush. Some people can come back more quickly. It just happens. But Benson Mayoa is number one, ran with the starters, Vontarius Dora with the twos. And it was Vontarius Dora. What I found interesting was Vontarius Dora with Jaquise Smith with the second team, and Arthur Motes was getting all his run on the third team. Whether it's simply because he there's one side of the line he plays better at, so they're going to play him on over right tackle, over left tackle, because that's what Jaquise Smith was playing, was Chandler Jones' spot over left tackle. And so you've got three guys that's at that Marcus Golden side playing over right tackle. You got Mayoa, you've got Dora, and you've got Motes. And then you add Cap Cappy on top of that, who played out of his mind against the threes, had three sacks, forced a fumble. And all he does is he loves going after quarterbacks. He loves it. He loves it. And that sort of production will be hard to keep him off the roster. But at the same time, Steve Wilks said he's got to do a much better job at anchoring against the run. Like, he's excited about rushing the passer. He's not nearly as excited about playing in the run. So I don't think anything was made any clearer, especially since both Smith and Motes play on special teams. Actually, so does one. Dora, Motes, and Jaquise Smith all play on special teams. Well, played on the starters. And so nothing was made clear other than, I think, Cap Cappy just threw his name into the mix suddenly of, hey, we have to consider him.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to, unfortunately, is, again, they've had a year to kind of address this position, and they've definitely thrown a lot of bodies at it, but I wouldn't say they threw many assets at it. So when you look at it, Cappy continues to produce at a astronomical level in the preseason. You would assume that would eventually earn him some type of roster spot, but he continues to find himself bouncing around. So, who knows what's going to happen with all of that. Like I said, I think Dora played the best, but again, we're still talking about an undrafted free agent. So I'm not sure if that's where you want to go, so to speak, as your starter opposite Chandler Jones. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm waiting for one of Maoa or Motes to really assert themselves and kind of put this competition, quote unquote, to bed and let this become kind of your base defense, and then letting Marcus Golden, you know, work his way back in slowly.
And with that, we'll go to our final segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. When we come back, we are going to talk about this game Friday night against the New Orleans Saints. What do we want to see? What do we expect to see? And, well, what does that mean moving forward? So that's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And we're going to talk about in this last second, we're going to talk about what are we looking forward to on Friday? What are we going to look forward to? Because we know a couple of things. What we know, for one, the starters are going to play longer than they did, that they're going to try and throw the ball more often, and that while David Johnson and Sam Bradford and Larry Fitzgerald will be pulled from the starters before the starters leave, we also know that Josh Rosen will get some go with the starters, which I am excited to see. So, I mean, in terms of, we already know who's the starter at this point. I want to see some promise from Rosen, because we saw promise. We just didn't see the production because of the people not helping him around him on the field.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing. But, and I agree with you 100% on Rosen. He's clearly the most important piece the Diamondbacks possess at this time. But for me, I want to see this wide receiver position begin to work itself out. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head that's only going to happen if Bradford and Rosen are, whoever is the quarterback working with the first team, is getting the time to work with these wide receivers. And so I want to see, I mean, I honestly, if they do the same thing with Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson as they did in the first game, I'm actually okay with that, because I don't need to see what those guys can do. I know what they can do. I want to continue to see the maturation of Chase Edmonds, and I want to see Bryce Butler, Chad Williams, and Christian Kirk as the three wide receivers out there running with the ones, and see if they can do anything, because I do think you have to feel at least a little better about the situation going into the regular season than you do right now. And I don't think you can say that you feel better about the wide receivers than you did in May after the draft than you do right now.
And for me, I'm looking at the defense. I'm going to stare down the defense in this game because, you know, Drew Brees didn't play last week, which means Drew Brees is going to play this week. They've got that Saints offense is very, very good. They run the ball extremely well. They've got Drew Brees, which means they pass the ball extremely well. And so this gets a chance to see, at least in a small sample size, just how good can this defense be? Because if they can play with the same sort of production and the same sort of physicality that they did against the Chargers, that bodes well. Because if they can be good against a Saints team and Drew Brees, even if it's a preseason, that is a very, very good thing. And you can project that to the season, providing that they stay healthy. So that's one of those that's it's definitely a positive portent looking towards the future for the regular season, if and when that they do produce.
And when you look at this team, one of the biggest keys is going to be something we just talked about at length, and that's who steps up in the secondary. So we know that Ben Wickery is going to make this roster. The question is who steps up after him. Christian Campbell, Brandon Williams, Dietrich Nichols, who are the guys back there? And so they're not going to see Drew Brees. I mean, who knows? Maybe they do. But I would doubt they're going to see Drew Brees. So instead, you're going to end up looking at I don't even know who the Saints backup is anymore. Is it Chase Daniel again?
I don't know. I don't think he is. What is he playing, Chicago now?
I don't know. Oh, yeah, that's right. I saw that video. That was funny, actually. You know, when you look at the Saints team,
Taysom Hill and JT Barrett. Yeah.
So maybe we won't learn too much about those guys this week.
Oh, wait, they got Tom Savage too.
So again, maybe we're not going to learn too much about those guys.
Hey, Tom Savage was an all-star. Don't you remember?
they have a lot of talented weapons still, even after their second team. I mean, you're talking about, obviously, Michael Thomas is one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. Ted Ginn continues to produce at a high level. But then they brought in Cameron Meredith, who was a nice pickup. They drafted Tre'Quan Smith, a guy you and I talked about out of Central Florida that we thought could be a nice fit.
Michael Floyd.
Michael Floyd plays on that roster. he legitimately, have you looked at their depth chart? He's legitimately like the last wide receiver along with a guy named Keith Kirkwood. So
that's not a real person.
Exactly. So that's how far down he's fallen. I'm a little disappointed that we're not going to get to see Marcus Davenport, because that was a guy a lot of Cardinals fans had their eye on, and we keep talking about this defensive end position, and obviously nobody wants to give up Josh Rosen. But it's always interesting to look at guys that were passed on to see how they play and if they live up to the billing, especially since the Saints traded an ungodly amount of assets to draft him. And so he's injured. You know, he's coming off a groin injury. So they're holding him out. So it's going to be unfortunate that we don't get to see him. But this Saints defense last year was good. And this Saints defense this year is expecting to be even better. So if we get even 10 plays of Arizona Cardinals number one offense versus Saints number one defense, I would love to see how that plays out. And then in the same breath, you're talking about maybe the best, if not one of the top five, offensive lines in the NFL with one of the quickest release quarterbacks in the NFL. It's going to be a great, great test coming off of Cardale Jones. So it's and a terrible Chargers offensive line. Let's not forget that as well. So it's kind of the perfect second preseason game in that you're getting a better team, but you're also getting a team that is going to push you at where you think your strengths are right now. And so it's going to give us a better idea. Are those really strengths, or is it that the Chargers are just not that good when they're rolling out a lot of second teamers and the Cardinals made them, you know, look bad. It's such an exciting 25 minutes, and then you and I'll sit through and take our notes and try to make it through the 4-hour trudge of this preseason game.
Because preseason games, it's an odd. At that game on Saturday, aside from the late highlight with Chad Kenoff throwing the ball to Jalen Tolliver, that game was really hard to watch. Hard to watch.
I can't imagine what you guys in the press box are doing other than trying to pay attention to the game, like keep yourself drawn into the interest of the game, because that got really boring really quick.
Now, I would love to see, because we got a glimpse of it, Christian Kirk should have had a touchdown, but the turf monster got him.
He just didn't want to take on that punter one-on-one, so
he took a dive out of there. But That's, you know, the that on one play tells me, ooh, because we haven't had an impact punt return guy. I mean, Ted Ginn had the one return a couple year, few years ago in 2014. Had the one that basically won the game against the Giants, but he was a non-factor overall. Basically, since Patrick Peterson's rookie year, punt returns have been very, very lackluster, and Christian Kirk is a legitimate pass punt returner and showed that on that first, just that first return, that this could be some, that could be some fun this year. Special teams might not, might actually be exciting this year.
And I thought Matt McCrane kicked the ball well. And I know there's not much talk about a potential, you know, kicking competition, but I think that the more McCrane continues to put the ball through the uprights to kick the ball shallow into the end zone, forcing the, you know, the opponent to run the ball out, I think the more you're going to look at this and go, huh, $4.5 million for Phil Dawson, huh? That's where we're at. Like, I'm not saying they're going to cut him, but it's going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot more difficult conversation if everything McCrane does is literally in the middle of the uprights, and also he's putting them in a position where teams are going to have to work on a really long field.
Yeah, and I see how this ends. I at least see with McCrane. He's a guy that if he doesn't land somewhere, because it's, I mean, really, it's hard for kickers to get a legitimate shot and actually stick with the team, especially early on. They're probably evaluating him more for next year, maybe. I don't think they're going to practice squad him. That would be silly. But you don't practice squad a guy unless you've got an injury guy who's a kicker. But if all goes well, you can get this year out of Dawson. And if you need a go list, you've got McCrane on your go list if he hasn't landed anywhere. And worst case scenario, you sign him next year to compete with whoever you bring in next year. Because if Phil Dawson's kicking at age 44, I don't know what, especially if he kicks this year like he did last year. But that is an interesting to do, because it looked like early on there might be a competition. Then at the beginning of training camp, it looked like there really was no competition. But he kicked well, so that's something. And that something is more than nothing. And if he looks like he's decent, and we will get to see him extend in extended duty in that fourth preseason game, he will probably punt and kick. Maybe. I don't know how they'll do that for Holder. But it will give – we'll be able to see him significantly.
And I think the other thing is that you know, you hit on it, and we can talk about this more as the preseason progresses, but after one game, and it's absurd to say this, but after one game, I don't think you can completely reject the idea of the Cardinals having four quarterbacks on this roster with Knopf on the practice squad, because you're still talking about Sam Bradford, right? Like, I don't see Knopf making the roster, but unless there's a injury, God forbid. But I could see the Cardinals taking the stance of, we want this kid, we like this kid, we want this kid in house on this practice squad, because let's face it, we have Sam Bradford as our quarterback. So we're at any point, you know, to the part where, hey, Sam's out for the next 6 weeks with a knee problem, and we're not sure if he's going to be back. And it's much easier to bring Knopf just straight up from the practice squad than trying to bring him back if he's on another practice squad. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they kept four quarterbacks, which sounds absurd, but when you look at the depth chart, it would kind of make sense.
That's a possibility, but yeah, that in that scenario, that would make sense. Is there anything else that you can think of that would be worth noting? Obviously, I'd like to see David Johnson look good again. He doesn't have to bust off every single run for 14 yards. That would be one heck of a year if every time he runs the ball that is 14 yards. But I want him to look physical again. I want there to be holes, and I don't want, and obviously I don't want them to get hurt. So
do it. Yeah, do, be aggressive. Do it quickly, and then get out. And
you and, yes.
You and Fitz go sit in some bubble wrap on the sidelines.
That's right. So if Wilk's saying he wants to see David Johnson play significantly more, David Johnson got 2 carries. Let's up that to 5, and then you increased it by 150%. That sounds good to me.
Exactly, and I'm 100% with you on that. The biggest thing to me really is going to be the wide receivers. Bryce Butler, Chad Williams, Christian Kirk. We talked about Nelson and Greg Little. If those are guys you're counting on as 2 or 3 wide receivers, oh, this is
they got to do something. They got to do something.
Yeah, this is going to be a long year. So give us something to evaluate, because we really, as people that watch the game, we had nothing to go on in this first game. Literally nothing. So just give us something to evaluate of, okay, this isn't going to be a problem, or oh God, this is a bigger problem than we thought. But give us something. Like, don't just keep throwing to the tight ends. Like, we need to know what's going on at the number 2 wide receiver position.
Unless that's what we're going to take out of it, is that Sam Bradford's going to throw to Larry Fitzgerald, David Johnson, and whoever's at tight end.
And you, that could be what's happening. So,
all right. And with that, that will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best Cardinals talk, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We will be back in a week talking about this preseason game and looking forward to the Cardinals Sunday night football version of preseason against the Dallas Cowboys on the road. We'll be back next week. Hope the Cardinals stay healthy. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root, and we will be back again in a week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.